tingled. Something must have happened, she thought. She opened the news summary and started reading. 5 minutes later, she was waking Mina. "I don't think I want to believe it," Mina Oakpeak said. Naki scanned the heavens, dredging childhood knowledge of the stars. With some minor adjustment to allow for parallax, the old constellations were still more or less valid when seen from turquoise. "That's it, I think." "What?" Mina said, still sleepy. Naki waved her hand at a vague area of the sky, pinned between Scorpius and Hercules. "Ophiuchus. If our eyes were sensitive enough, we'd be able to see it now, a little prick of blue light." "I've had enough of little pricks for one lifetime," Mina said, tucking her arms around her knees. Her hair was the same pure black as Naki's, but trimmed into a severe, spiked crop, which made her look younger or older depending on the light. She wore black shorts and a shirt that left her arms bare. Luminous tattoos in emerald and indigo spiraled around the piebald marks of random fungal invasion that covered her arms, thighs, neck, and cheeks. The fullness of the moons caused the fungal patterns to glow a little themselves, shimmering with the same emerald and indigo hues. Naki had no tattoos and scarcely any fungal patterns of her own, and could not help feeling slightly envious of her sister's adornments. Mina continued, "But seriously, you don't think it might be a mistake?"
"I don't think so, no.
See what it says there? They detected it weeks ago, but they kept quiet until now so that they could make more measurements."
"I'm surprised there wasn't a rumor."
Naki nodded. "They kept the lid on it pretty well, which doesn't mean there isn't going to be a lot of trouble."
And they think this blackout is going to help?"
"My guess is official traffic's still getting through. They just don't want the rest of us clogging up the network with endless speculation."
"Can't blame us for that, can we? I mean, everyone's going to be guessing, aren't they?"
"Maybe they'll announce themselves before very long," Naki said doubtfully. While they had been speaking, the airship had passed into a zone of the sea largely devoid of bioluminescent surface life. Such zones were almost as common as the nodal regions where the network was thickest, like the gaping voids between clusters of galaxies. The wake of the sensor pod was almost impossible to pick out, and the darkness around them was absolute, only occasionally relieved by the mindless errand of a solitary messenger sprite.
Mina said, "And if they don't?"
"Then I guess we're all in a lot more trouble than we'd like." For the first time in a century, a ship was approaching turquoise, commencing its deceleration from interstellar cruise speed. The flare of the light hugger's exhaust was pointed straight at the turquoise system. Measurement of the Doppler shift of the flame showed that the vessel was still 2 years out, but that was hardly any time at all on turquoise. The ship had yet to announce itself, but even if it turned out to have nothing but benign intentions, a short trade stopover perhaps, the effect on turquoise society would be incalculable. Everyone knew of the troubles that followed the arrival of the Pelican in impiety. When the Ultras moved into orbit, there had been much unrest below. Spies had undermined lucrative trade deals. Cities had jockeyed for prestige, competing for technological tidbits. There had been hasty marriages and equally hasty separations. A century later, old enmities smoldered just beneath the surface of cordial intercity politics. It wouldn't be any better next time.
"Look," Mina said, "it doesn't have to be all that bad. They might not even want to talk to us. Didn't a ship pass through the system about 70 years ago without so much as a by your leave?"
Naki nodded. It was mentioned in a sidebar to one of the main articles. They had engine trouble or something, but the experts say there's no sign of anything like that this time.
So they've come to trade. What have we got to offer them that we didn't have last time?"
"Not much, I suppose."
Mina nodded knowingly. "A few works of art that probably won't travel very well. 10-hour-long nose flute symphonies, anyone?"
She pulled a face.
"That's supposedly my culture, and even I can't stand it. What else? A handful of discoveries about the jugglers, which have more than likely been replicated elsewhere a dozen times. Technology? Medicine? Forget it. They must think we have something worth coming here for, Naki said. Whatever it is, we'll just have to wait and see, won't we? It's only 2 years.
I expect you think that's quite a long time, Mina said.
Actually.
Mina froze.
Look! Something whipped past in the night, far below, then a handful of them, then a dozen, and then a whole bright squadron. Messenger sprites, Naki diagnosed. But she had never seen so many of them moving at once, and on what was so evidently the same errand. Against the darkness of the ocean, the lights were mesmerizing, curling and weaving, swapping positions and occasionally veering far from the main pack before arcing back toward the swarm. Again, one of the sprites climbed to the altitude of the airship, loitering for a few moments on fanning wings before whipping off to rejoin the others. The swarm receded, becoming a tight ball of fireflies, and then only a pale, globular smudge. Naki watched until she was certain that the last sprite had vanished into the night.
"Wow," Mina said quietly.
"Have you ever seen anything like that?"
"Never."
"Bit funny that it should happen tonight, wouldn't you say?"
"Don't be silly," Mina said. "The jugglers can't possibly know about the ship."
"We don't know that for sure. Most people heard about this ship hours ago. That's more than enough time for someone to have swum." Mina conceded her younger sister's point with a delicate provisional nod of the head.
"Still, information flow isn't usually that clear-cut. The jugglers store patterns, but they seldom show any sign of comprehending actual content. We're dealing with a mindless biological archiving system, a museum without a curator."
"That's one view."
Mina shrugged. "I'd love to be proved otherwise."
"Well, do you think we should try following them? I know we can't track sprites over any distance, but we might be able to keep up for a few hours before we drain the batteries."
"We wouldn't learn much."
"We wouldn't know until we tried," Naki said, gritting her teeth. "Come on, it's got to be worth a go, hasn't it? I reckon that swarm moved a bit slower than a single sprite. We'd at least have enough for a report, wouldn't we?"
Mina shook her head. "All we'd have is a single observation with a little bit of speculation thrown in. You know we can't publish that sort of thing. And anyway, assuming that sprite swarm did have something to do with the ship, there are going to be hundreds of similar sightings tonight."
"I was just hoping it might take our minds off the news."
"Perhaps it would. But it would also make us unforgivably late for our target."
Mina dropped the tone of her voice, making an obvious effort to sound reasonable.
"Look, I understand your curiosity. I feel it as well. But the chances are it was either a statistical fluke or part of a global event everyone else will have had a much better chance to study. Either way, we can't contribute anything useful, so we might as well just forget about it."
She rubbed at the marks on her forearm, tracing the paisley-patterned barbs and whorls of glowing coloration.
"And I'm tired, and we have several busy days ahead of us. I think we just need to put this one down to experience, all right?"
"Fine," Naki said.
"I'm sorry, but I just know we'd be wasting our time."
"I said fine." Naki stood up and steadied herself on the railing that traversed the length of the airship's back.
"Where are you going?"
"To sleep. Like you said, we've got a busy day coming up. We'd be fools to waste time chasing a fluke, wouldn't we?" An hour after dawn, they crossed out of the dead zone. The sea below began to thicken with floating life, becoming soupy and torpid. A kilometer or so farther in, and the soup showed ominous signs of structure, a blue-green stew of ropey strands and wide, kelp-like plates. They suggested the floating, half-digested entrails of embattled sea monsters. Within another kilometer, the floating life had become a dense, vegetative raft, stinking of brine and rotting cabbage. Within another kilometer of that, the raft had thickened to the point where the underlying sea was only intermittently visible. The air above the raft was humid, hot and pungent with microscopic irritants. The raft itself was possessed of a curiously beguiling motion, bobbing and writhing and gyring according to the ebb and flow of weirdly localized current systems. It was as if many